Hello there, everybody. Welcome back to episode number 73 of the WP Cafe Show with myself and Keith Devon. I'm Mark Wilkinson. This is episode 73. We've got lots to talk about in this episode. If you are joining us live on YouTube, thank you so much. I can see that, according to StreamYard, that five people are now joining us. Please say hello in the chat. I'd love to see who's watching, listening, and get involved as well. Hi, Sam. Thanks a lot for letting us know. So, Keith, what have you been up to this week? How's your week been?
It's been good. I have been doing some development work, which is nice.
Because I do mess it
with the product stuff. I do kind of a little bit less kind of creating stuff from scratch type development and more kind of maintenance-y development. Just been fun. We've been building a product catalog for a client. So a bit of front end on that and a few little fun JavaScript-y type challenges with like sorting table columns and things like that using FacetWP. So yeah, I really enjoy that kind of stuff. So leaning on ChatGPT a little bit for a little bit of the JavaScript. It is incredible. I know we've spoken about it before.
Yeah.
And it's not always perfect. But we are very, very close to a point where I can just, and it'll be voice soon, but I can have a conversation with ChatGPT and it produces the code I need. So I've asked it to do something and then I kind of keep iterating on it. It's like, no, actually, can you do it this way, or can you do it that way, or can we add this variable in? Can we also do this on the click event? And it's just like, yep, sure. Yep. Done. Be cool if you could run that code then live. So if you could like hook ChatGPT into your code editor and do it that way.
You do it with GitHub Copilot. That's what I've
yeah,
got.
Yeah, so it's just not the same. It's not the same interface, is it? It's not a chat-based interface.
But it could be.
It definitely could be.
Couldn't it?
I'm sure there's people working on that kind of thing. So
yeah. I mean, GitHub Copilot's just completely changed where I code. It's like, it's too clever. Like, it knows me. It knows what I write. And it's just... Yeah, if you're not using it, I'd have a go with it. It's really cool.
Yeah,
really cool.
And I'm dressed up because I'm DJing tonight. So
I thought you've got a very posh shirt on.
It's
there.
My daughter's school's staff Christmas party.
Ooh.
So my brother-in-law is the headmaster, and he asked me if I'd spin some tunes. So I'm going to do some dance classics tonight.
Very good.
Yeah. How about you? How are you? How's your week been?
Good. Yeah. Similar, really. I've been doing some development stuff, which we're going to talk about, which has been nice. And just the usual. Yeah, we integrated our 450th client in Job Relay, which is an interesting milestone. I've got to confess, that number is not... It's not made up, but it's not. I can't actually identify the 450 straight away. But when I add some other numbers up, they come to 450. So that's why I've said it's 450.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track of for various reasons.
It is hard to get the precise figure on that one.
Yeah,
but we've definitely done like 450 clients. They have then some have multiple websites, so we've done more websites than that. And of course, people have cancelled, so there isn't that many sort of active people using it at the moment, but that's, you get the idea anyway. I've ended up coming to that number. So that was a nice little milestone to get through. So it was good.
Very good.
Yeah. So that was me this week. Other than that, it's been plodding along and got some exciting stuff to chat about. Hi, Sam. Thanks for joining us. Hi, Joss. I think that's right. Thanks for joining us. And Emily, who's on Twitter apparently, which is good. We've not had anyone from Twitter, I don't think, join us. So,
no, that's
or if
cool.
we have, they haven't said so in the chat, so we haven't been able to say hi. So, right, what we're getting into this week then, we've got 4 different topics to discuss. Whether we get through them all, I am not sure. The first one is custom attributes on blocks. That was kind of my big development task. I guess it was done Friday, actually. It kicked it off, and then towards the start of this week. We've had the state of the word from Matt Mullenweg, so we've got some thoughts on the sort of topics that were brought up in that one. A bit about email deliverability, a bit of a problem that we've been having for the last few weeks, months even, could be. We don't really know, to be honest, but anyway, there you go. And block editor adoption, which kind of ties into what I've just been saying with my tweet about our Job Relay integrations, if we get time to do that. So, yeah, let's fire away then with custom attributes on blocks.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I've always been interested in doing is, well, as you well know, if you follow me, I'm all for extensibility. And one of the things I'd like to do is extend the core blocks. And I've never really known how to do it. I've had ideas and I've experimented and failed several times.
Can you give an example of the kind of thing that you'd want to do?
So, for example, adding a different field to a block. So you could add other data, for example, to a block. Something as simple as it could be.
Or like a little checkbox or something. Or
yeah, checkbox that adds a class on something or allows you anything like that, you know, so that sort of thing. So, and this came about because I watched a video from Brian Cords. If you haven't watched any of his videos, I would highly recommend to look him up on his YouTube channel. He does lots of little block stuff. And I must admit, the way in which he talks through it and explains it is the best I've seen for someone that doesn't really understand React and JavaScript and that sort of stuff. He talks through it in language which I can understand, which is really good.
Yeah, that's great.
And I watched this video about custom attributes he was doing on blocks. And the what he was doing was he had the query loop block. And if you've used a query loop block, you can stick like an excerpt of the post on, and it gives you like a text field to type in what you want the sort of read more or view post button should be. But it's not a button, it's a text. And he wanted it to be a button. I think we've actually come across this when we were doing it, like, why is it not a button? So he added some fields, attributes, as they're called in the block editor landscape, to the button editor, to the button block. So you could choose to have that link to the post's permalink, or he even added an option where you could link it to a value of a custom field, and then you just type the name of the post, the meta key of the field that you wanted to use.
Okay.
And his video talks about how to do that. So he was essentially adding a drop-down select box to what we'd call, I think, the inspector tools, which is basically the right-hand side sidebar in their own panel. And then he was adding a text input for the meta key only when a specific option was chosen from that select input. And I watched it, and I was a sort of sparked to think, wow, that's pretty much what we want to do quite a lot of the time. Mm. And actually, the way he explained it, I was like, wow, I think I could have a go at that. So then I think it was like a day later, I was working on our Better Core Video Embeds plugin. I can't remember what I was doing now. Someone had asked me to do something. Oh, that was it.
Some thumbnail?
Basic. Sorry, go on.
Was it the thumbnail? Image thumbnail?
That's what I did the work on, but I wasn't actually, at the time I was working on the plugin doing some other changes. I think one of them was making the play button an actual button for like accessibility stuff and things. And then I know, and I remember that you've always said, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could actually have a custom thumbnail? So the way Better Video Embeds work is essentially you paste in your YouTube or Vimeo or whatever video, it goes and grabs the thumbnail that you've set at YouTube, and then it uses that as the what to display on the page rather than loading in the iframe. And only when you click the image, it then loads the iframe in. So you were saying, like, wouldn't it be great if we could have a custom upload button in the back end on an embed block that allows you to set your own custom thumbnail rather than having to use the YouTube one?
Yeah.
Because you might be embedding someone else's YouTube video where you don't have control over the thumbnail.
Right.
So I thought, right, let's have a go. I thought, let's have a go, see if I can do this now based on this sort of knowledge that we found. And I did, and it's in the plugin, and it's live on WordPress right now. So it's got an upload button in it where you can add a thumbnail. And the way it works is you create an attribute for the block using a filter. So you say, hey, this block embed, in this case, has now got an additional attribute. I call it thumbnail ID. And then you basically add, again with a filter, some more inspector controls to that panel on the right-hand side. I added an image upload, which I actually used from 10ups block components library, because there doesn't appear to be one in core, which I thought was a bit strange, or if there is, we couldn't find it, and everyone recommended to use that one anyway. There was some nuances about getting that working. Like, I put it on to start with, and it was like I could add an image, it was great, and the image showed, but then I couldn't remove it, which is bizarre. So apparently there's two components that you kind of work with together. One's the actual image, and the other one is kind of like a toolbar to add, remove, and change, and replace, and so on. So I added those two together. And then it just saves the ID of the image you've uploaded, the attachment ID, on that attribute. And then on the front end, you just use the render block filter, which basically allows you to change the contents, the markup or the output of your block. Just detect whether that thumbnail ID is present. And if it is, grab the image with like WP get attachment image and output your thumbnail, really. So yeah, it was pretty good. I was pretty pleased with myself. But
and you were saying that the block editor handbook is way better than it used to be as well?
Yeah, as part of doing that and doing some of the work I was doing when we spoke, was it last week or a couple of weeks ago, about building a full site editing theme? The block handbook is definitely coming along and making progress, as is the theme handbook. So if you've dabbled with block editing, not block editing, block editor development in the past, and you've used the block editor handbook and perhaps been a bit underwhelmed, definitely go back there and have another look. It's taken a significant improvement. So massive congratulations to all the team that has been doing that. Well done.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder, Mark, if we should put a link to that video you mentioned, Brian's video, on the website, wpcafe.show.
In the show notes, like we did last week. We'll put that in. I'll put a link to that plugin as well. But yeah, you can have a look at it.
Definitely. Yeah, because it's pretty big, isn't it, to be able to extend core blocks like that. I mean, that's really quite powerful, and it's another way to kind of get into the block ecosystem. It's another kind of hurdle that falls if you know how to do that. So I think that's really, really important for people.
I think Brian's video was because for me, every time I've tried to do this stuff, the first hurdle with this is that I can't just write code. I've got to get some sort of compiler in place. And that is one of the things that has actually come on massively. So that once you've done it once or twice, it's actually very easy to get set up. So we've got this WordPress scripts package, and we've got this create block plugin package, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Which kind of literally just do it for you. And as I said, watching some very brief videos, Brian, at the start of his video, he explained this very well, how he does it with the, I think he used the create block plugin script. And essentially, it was like, well, I don't need a block. You kind of just remove the stuff you don't want, and it still works. It still does all the bits you do want. So the video explains it really well. You kind of just delete all the files in source that you don't want to use, and then they just never get compiled, and you just end up with one index file in build, and it's perfect. You just enqueue that, and it works, which is really good. So that was good. Good to learn from. And I feel a bit more confident about attacking things like that. I still think complex things are going to be way beyond me, but I think things, you know, that's where I want to get to, where things like that, where you think adding a field, well, I call it a field, they call it an attribute, but like a field to a block, I think that should be something we should be able to do. And I'm feeling more confident we could do that now, because I've got the basics in place, but I've also got like, what do you call it? Like how the flow of that should happen. So add an attribute, I don't know if it's called an inspector control. Again, add a field to the block that controls the attribute, and then use render block to detect the attribute and do something with it on the front end. I kind of understand now how that works.
And so that opens up a lot of possibilities.
Like yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I mean, you can swap out the whole HTML just based on a checkbox. You know, there's so much that we can do with just that simple bit of knowledge. Where otherwise we would either be reaching directly for something like ACF, and I'm not knocking ACF, it's amazing and we use it all the time, but it's not native, it's not the same UI, it's not like...
It's different.
You don't want to have to create a, you know, advanced paragraph block. You just want to use the paragraph block and
that's what's been frustrating, hasn't it? That you've had these use cases where you think, oh, this is just ridiculous. This is something so simple. If I could just have this setting on this block. Otherwise, you have to create your entirely new block. I saw someone on the WordPress Slack UK meetup asking about this, and they were talking about the ability to lock things inside a column block and so forth. And I can't remember the upside of the conversation, but it was essentially, oh, yeah, the column block won't allow you to do this. Apparently, it's a restriction of the column block. I can't remember what it was. But essentially, the person posting it says, oh, it's okay, I just created my own column block.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's exactly what we don't want people doing, really, because it seems silly. We've got everything, the column block's there, it's got everything we need, and yet we're having to replace it because we can't extend it. You know, because it's difficult. It's more difficult, in my opinion, than it was in the past, extending things. But must admit, it was nice to be able to get somewhere doing this.
That's great. Feeling a little bit better about things then this week in terms of like WordPress development and the future of it. And also, I think that that leads into, I think, our next point, which was the state of the word, which was on Friday, was it? I can't remember. Was it last week? Last week?
No, it was this week.
It was this week.
Tuesday, was it? I think it was Tuesday or Monday.
In Madrid. Very swanky venue. Looked great, actually. I don't have too many like super specific takeaways from it, but I am feeling more, maybe this is just what these types of events do. They make you feel a little bit better about it in the short term. But I do feel better about the project. I think whenever you see its capabilities and the stuff that they're working on and how much they're getting done and, you know, all the improvements, it is quite impressive. I do still think, though, like, you know, they're showing off the interactivity API, which I'm sure is going to be really useful and really powerful. I'm still not entirely sure what it is. You're kind of building, they say head. They kind of said it was like you could build headless style websites without it being headless. It's all real WordPress templates. It sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Not explained brilliantly well. Like, we both looked at the demo and were like, what is it actually doing? Like, what? I don't get it. I don't get why this is so impressive. So I don't think the demos and stuff was like brilliant. Maybe we just don't get it. But yeah, it does. It sort of makes me think that's great, but then there's still loads of like just kind of basic stuff that run WordPress that I think I'd rather they were focusing on. And we said this loads of times, you know, the command palette comes out and you're like, who's asking for a command palette? The interactivity API comes out and you're like, who asked for that? Like, you know, we just want to get the basics right at this point. And now they're moving on to the next phase, which is collaboration. I'm like, it doesn't really feel like the customization stage is done yet. I mean, we've only just got something that handles fonts.
I agree.
Like, just the page management is still terrible. The, you know, all that kind of stuff. The kind of like, but then they're working on all this. You know, the UI in WordPress is now split between the kind of classic UI and the more modern JavaScript powered UIs for the full site editing and block editor. Like, I'd love to see some of that addressed like quite quickly, just to bring everything up to like a higher standard. But yeah, generally, and like you can talk through a few of the things, that a few of your personal highlights, but generally, like, it does feel like this is a bit of software that is getting better. But is it getting better in the right places? And we'll come
back
this loops into the market share, which we'll kind of come to in adoption. You know, why after all these advancements, after 5 years of the Gutenberg project in core, is nobody using it? Yeah.
Well, let's hold that thought for that topic. But yeah. So my biggest takeaway, and let us know what your takeaway was from the state of word, if you watched it, of course. If you didn't watch it, we can stick it in the show notes. It's on YouTube and the WordPress channel. It'll come up if you search State of the Word. My biggest takeaway was that Matthias Ventura, I think it is the lead. I think he's the lead of the block editor project. He was mentioning specifically about agencies building WordPress sites with the block editor. And that's the first time I've really heard that set of people being acknowledged that they need solutions in the block editor to work for them, and mentioned in that sort of section or that segment of the talk was things like partially synced patterns. So where you can have a pattern and then it partially syncs, meaning that the content isn't synced but the settings and things are. So if you upload or you change the style of that pattern, that style gets reflected across the website. So at the moment, we've got this ridiculous situation where we've got this pattern that's used on 50 pages. If we want to change something, we have to change it on all 50 pages. That's a massive problem for agencies. And he was specifically addressing those sorts of issues, which I thought was interesting. So partially synced patterns was mentioned.
Yeah.
Of something that's going to hopefully come shortly. And the other one for me was connecting blocks to custom fields. So you can have, it's a bad example, but you can have a heading block, just add a heading block as normal, but you can connect it to the value of a custom field so that the output of that heading is the value of the custom field. And obviously then if that value of that custom field changes, that heading will change without you actually having to edit the page.
Yeah.
And so on. And as I said, there's far better use cases than that for that sort of thing, but that is really encouraging as well. Mm-hmm. You know, think WooCommerce, for example. You could have a paragraph block that outputs the price of a product.
Yeah.
And that block can be connected to the WooCommerce price field. And then when the price is updated, it automatically updates.
Yeah.
Again, maybe not a great example, but you get the idea of what we sort of think there. And I think that's stuff that's not really been talked about before. It's been stuff that agencies have been asking for. I don't want to say it's been ignored. It maybe not been ignored, but it's not been a priority. And it was mentioned in this state of the word. I think that's an important step to perhaps having some of those things worked on and you know, hopefully getting into core eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about both of those things. I think we can do a lot. And again, you know, using, you know, we've been kind of forced into the Elementor world recently, and you know, I know that you can use custom field data within Elementor. It's yeah. kind of like hooked into lots of its kind of blocks by default. So there's like a little icon, and you click it, and you know, populate this heading or this paragraph or this whatever with metadata. And I was like, that's cool.
You've used a lot with RecPress, haven't you?
We have
integrated Google's Elementor site, so you can output the RecPress data in a template, which is quite nice.
Yep. Yep. So that's good. What else did anything else stand out for you?
Nothing majorly to me. No, those were the real takeaways I had from the thing. What about yourself? Anything?
Yeah, just one little. It wasn't a throwaway sentence, but I think it was Matthias again, and he was talking about the challenge of building, I guess, of the Gutenberg project, because it has two sides, and the two sides were as a design tool and as a writing tool. And I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah,
so no content management in that equation, which is, for me, it's a different challenge than writing or design.
Yeah.
And you know, within full site editing at the minute, I do feel like WordPress has lost some of its content management capabilities in the way that, you know, we are just dumping content onto pages and in HTML rather than into databases where we can query stuff and like pull things together and where we need to. So some of that with the custom data or custom field data, you know, block or whatever is going to address some of that. And the synced patterns stuff probably addresses some of that. But I just thought that was interesting that he saw it as like a two-sided coin. And I kind of don't. I kind of see there's another side. Because I think the writing experience is very good in the block editor. I really like it. But the challenge is managing full sites. It's not writing single pages. Writing single pages is I love it, but managing large sites where you've got lots of like patterns, modules, you know, you've got to keep some consistency. I think that's where the big challenge is. Maybe it's just a semantic thing, and he kind of includes that in writing and design, but I just kind of stood out to me a little bit. But also just the phrase like design tool. You know,
I think that's an interesting design tool, because I think a lot of the time agencies don't want it to be a design tool.
No.
And actually a lot of clients don't want it to be a design tool. They don't want to design. Wow. That's the whole point. And I find that when I'm writing pages like on our website and stuff, I'm like, I'm not a designer. I don't know whether to make this in a column or put a media texture. I don't know what it's going to look like. And it just sometimes ends up looking a bit of a mishmash, because
I don't know what the answer to that is, though. I mean,
yeah,
the answer to that probably is patterns, so that you can say, I've got some information. I'll browse some patterns and say, okay, yeah, so I've got a photo and I've got some text, so that like feature row type pattern will work, or this one will work, or whatever. Mm. That is probably the solution for that particular use case. I know that's what, you know, tools like Squarespace do. It's very pattern or kind of module based. You know, you've got a blank sheet and then you say, I want this type of thing. Like, I want a hero. And then there's lots of different versions of a hero and you choose the one that looks most attractive or is the most suitable. And it seems to work.
I don't think you'd get away from it entirely, but
I think all the micro controls are what we want to get rid of, or not get rid of, but like just get out of the way. So like, yeah, you don't need to think about margin and padding and font size and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like that's sort of done for you.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's done for you in a way that can be updated on a global level at some point when you change your mind in the future.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good. Yeah, we'll get there.
It is challenging, though. It's hard. Right? Yeah. These are all hard challenges.
We got a couple of comments here which is related to this. So Sam, thank you, says, custom fields was a big announcement from the State of the Word for me. So many times we've used full-site editing archive templates and had to build a custom block to render metadata, even if it's just rendered as text. Yeah, so many times I've had to do that as well. And usually I've just faked it by using a paragraph block and adding a custom class to it and then detecting for that class to change sort of what's output, which is a bit of a naff way of doing it. But
yeah, he's right. He corrects himself in the next comments. Single templates, not archive templates.
Sorry, single
templates. Same kind of idea.
Yeah, same kind of idea. And then Cameron, thank you, says, I think it's fair to say it has been ignored. I think that's the agency's side of things, and agencies haven't really been considered prior to now, only the Wix market. Yeah, I think that's probably the big push has been on that market, hasn't it? But it is nice to hear that it's now been mentioned, that the agencies are being thought of, and hopefully solutions for those is going to start coming to the fore, which I think will help a lot of agencies who want to consider using this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is good. And then Peter says, thank you, Peter, absolutely agree that the CMS benefit of separating content from design is being considered differently than it has been. Yeah, so that's good to see. We'll see what comes out of it. Hopefully we'll get some nice tools and features and things we can play around with, which will be good.
This might all have been part of the plan, and we just didn't know the plan. It's hard to know, isn't it? It sometimes feels like it's being made up as you go along. But they do seem to kind of get there in the end with most things. Like most of the kind of complaints we have do get addressed to some level.
So
I'm feeling more positive about the whole thing. But to bring us back down to earth, should we go into block editor adoption? Because I think that's
quite go for it. Yeah,
you tweeted
about our 450th integration, and the premise of the tweet was that with Job Relay and more, you know, growing with RecPress products, like we've seen a lot of people's websites. Like you log into the back end to do the integrations and stuff, you see a lot of people's websites. And out of all the integrations I've ever done with Job Relay, I am still yet to come up with a site that uses the block editor. So none of those 450 clients have had a better site that uses the block editor. Literally none.
Yeah.
Which actually staggers me. You know, the block editor's been out, what is it, 5 years, 4 years?
Yeah,
it's a long time, isn't it? And Job Relay was out in 2020, mid-2020, really, if you think about when the pandemic hit, we didn't really get going. And we've had no site, you know, using that. Now, there's been a mix of sites. There's been sites that people have built themselves. There's been sites that agencies have built. There's been sites that recruitment-specific agencies have built. And there's been sites that have been built by much bigger companies.
Yep.
But no one's used the block editor to date that I've come up with, so it's interesting to see.
Yeah, and same with RecPress, where we don't have the same kind of numbers with RecPress. But say like 20 odd sites that we've kind of worked on with RecPress.
Yep.
I don't think any of them. We did build a block. I'm not sure. Did we never use it? We did build blocks for RecPress.
Removing it, yeah.
And then we're thinking of actually removing the blocks because literally
kind of complicates
use them stuff. And we could just use short codes instead.
Yeah, it's interesting. And so Cameron just says block editor for content or block theme, never seen the block editor at all, whether it's full site editing, whether it's block, whether it's like, even if it was just for posts or pages or nothing else, never seen it used at all on a website that I've integrated with.
What is it going to take, do you think, for that to change?
Well, I think some of these new tools, I think for me, the number one reason why people aren't using it is because people only change to use something if they have a problem and they want to fix the problem, or they see something that is better than they already have that gives them more options that they already have that they can then pass on to clients that clients will like and clients will pay for. And at the moment, that doesn't happen with the block editor. No. I'm going to use the example of Elementor. So you're building your websites with Elementor. We don't, but hundreds, thousands of people do in agencies. And the block editor is worse than Elementor. It has less options in terms of the stuff that they want to give clients. So why change? Mm. Why would I want to go and learn all this stuff that's different that isn't going to be any good for me? In fact, it's going to create me more problems than it is going to solve because it doesn't provide me stuff that I can't do, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, you could argue that there's other benefits to doing it that way. You know, it's more core and less reliant on an external service, but you know, things like Elementor are huge. They're not going away tomorrow. No one cares about that. So for me, that's the reason why it's not really taking on stuff. Now, maybe there'll be a tipping point where the block editor gets better, you know, and everyone's like, well, I can't do that in Elementor and I can't do that the way we used to do it. But if I use blocks, I could do that. And I think only then will people really decide to say, I'm going to give it a go.
Can you see that happening though, realistically, right? Elementor are presumably making a good amount of money. They presumably got dedicated full-time developers working on it.
You would assume so.
Like they are ahead already from a feature point of view. Massive. So why are they ever going to drop behind? Like what's going to be? Is it just the sheer kind of force of the WordPress community making the block editor better? And the force of automatic and whatever like behind it.
Well, that's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that.
I'm just not sure. And I guess eventually price might come into it because the block editors and full site editing, like WordPress is free.
Essentially, I suppose so, yeah. But Elementor is not exactly...
It's not expensive.
...revolutionary amounts of money, is it? I don't know. I don't have a clue how much it is, but it's not. I don't think it's going to be like... $2,000 a side.
No, I don't think it's restrictive for most. Pricing for most people. No. Well, obviously, it isn't because it's so popular. I kind of struggle to see, like, how. I don't even know what to call it anymore. Let's just call it Gutenberg. How is Gutenberg going to beat these things? Like, what's it trying to beat them at, as well? Like, is it trying to just be is being faster, more accessible, easier to use, more features, more design control, better content management? Like, which is it? All of those things? Is it some of those things? Like, I'd never really thought about it like that before. I just think it's interesting.
I don't know is the answer to that.
No.
But going back to your question, like, how is the block editor or Gutenberg going to beat Elementor? I suppose one way of doing it would to move WordPress and the block editor in the direction that Elementor can't follow. As in, Elementor won't work with it. We're using Elementor. We could be using all the other block editors as well, the block page builders. There's a number of them. But I don't think that'll happen.
Why would you not use Elementor on our next project?
Because I don't know how to use Elementor. I'm actually in the same position with Elementor and the block editor. Actually, I'm probably further on in the block editor than I am with Elementor. I've never used it. I don't really know how it works. I don't know what to do. I'm in that position where it's just... I've got to learn it, you know.
Okay.
So for me, I may as well learn the core block editor. I think that's what I'd rather do, I think.
Okay, so taking your developer hat off, so if you were recommending WordPress to a friend of yours who owns a small business and they want a website, they want to use WordPress, would you recommend they use something like Elementor or would you recommend they stick with the block editor? If they were doing it themselves.
If they want me to help them, then they'd have to choose the block editor because I can't.
No, they're help not. They're not asking you to help.
That's a very good question. I'd probably say Elementor. I think at the moment.
And why? Like, because they can do what they.
Because so there's two reasons why. One, ultimately, it's probably I'm going to say better. Pick a term that you think is more appropriate than better, but more features, does more, can do more, etc. That's why. But also, if you do want something doing on your website in the future, there's going to be tons more people who know how to use Elementor and change it and edit it and extend it than there are the block editor at the moment. So you probably better go on with that route.
Yeah. So just the sheer market share of it. Which, yeah, like for the same argument, WordPress is so popular because there's so many extensions for it. There's so many people working on it. There's so many plugins for it. Yeah. It's the same thing for Elementor. There's a whole massive ecosystem around Elementor that there isn't around Gutenberg.
And if we had a client that comes to us, and we've had clients come to us, for example, that have that want a piece of work doing, and they come to us, we have a look at their website, and they're using something that we don't understand. So, for example, one of these theme frameworks, is it like it's called Twig or something, or something like that? So it's you log in, and the template file, it just isn't WordPress. Like I don't understand it, so I can't really help that client.
Yeah,
and this is the argument I've got. They are now restricted to getting someone to help them based on someone that knows how their website's been built. There might be, I don't think there's going to be as many as Elementor developers or just standard WordPress developers. And it's the same with sort of the block editor. Now, if someone has a site built using the block editor and then they want to do something else with it in a year's time, they're really restrictive as who can help them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not many at the moment, is my opinion.
A few comments I would like to jump into. Sam says, as an agency, if you didn't have a product and only built websites, could you afford to put hours into working out the basics like root padding aware in JSON? Yeah, root padding aware in JSON. For me, FSA still lacks build standards. Kind of, if you're as an agency, if we built websites. Yeah, well, as an agency building websites, we did decide to go down the kind of block editor, full site editing route. I guess we kind of did have time, but we did find it quite limiting and quite frustrating. We've always been kind of anti-page builders, just by probably to our detriment, maybe to some extent.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's tricky. Lacks build standards. Yeah, I completely agree. Standards are hard when things are so fresh and constantly changing. So that's kind of tricky. Emily, thanks for your comment on Twitter. I do feel FSE theme dev is much more flexible than a page builder. I would love for Emily to expand on that. In what way is full site editing development more flexible than something like Elementor? I think my experience is opposite. I'd love to hear why, Emily. Couple from Elliot. I think the benefit of using the block editor is that it's future proofing. Yes, that is a benefit. I would say that is fairly low down the list of most people who are setting up a website, because they don't last. Websites tend to not last that long anyway.
Yeah, we had this discussion the other
years,
week
4 years
with someone. Maybe it was just me and you, I can't remember now, but you know, you could argue, well, using Elementor might go away. Yeah, it might. It's probably not, because like I said, the market share is huge. It's a massive business. It's not a three-person company that are going to change their mind and do something else. It's a big business. And for the majority of sites that we build, and I would argue that the majority of WordPress development and design agencies build, are for businesses that are, you know, 100 pages, 50 blog posts, and so on. So if you need to rebuild that because Elementor's going away, it isn't that difficult just to copy and paste all the content if that's your last option. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
The risk if isn't you that are, high.
Yeah, if you are, you know, one of the big players, you know, that sites that are built like by Human Made and those big companies, then yeah, it's a massive problem because you've got millions of posts and millions of pages to think about. Well, we've got this stuck in this other system.
Yeah, completely.
But
agree.
For the vast majority of everyone else, it just isn't an issue and people don't care about it.
And what does Elementor going away actually mean? Because you probably still have it installed and it might continue to work just fine for the next 3 years with no updates. So, I mean, it wouldn't be an ideal situation,
No.
Yeah, and Ali also says it's native. Again, sort of agree, but who cares? Like, why is that important?
Is ACF native?
Yeah, yeah.
Because people use that all the time, don't they? Is that native? We don't really consider that as a plugin that could go away.
Yeah, agree.
Why not?
Really, really good point. Emily has replied, page builders have a bunch of pre-made design and functionality decisions. Global change is harder. I'm going to caveat my opinion here is that I haven't actually had to build a site from scratch with Elementor. I'm coming in to Elementor sites when they've been built and all this stuff has been done. So that stage of it might be hard. I kind of think that WordPress themes, though, even block themes, have a lot of pre-made design and functionality. Maybe not so much functionality decisions, but certainly a lot of pre-made design decisions. And I have found that global change is hard.
Change is hard, yeah, I was thinking that.
Especially because you've got to jump into theme.json instead of just doing something in a nice UI like you can with Elementor. But, you know, people's situations are different and levels of experience in these things are different. So, I mean, I'm not saying that Emily's wrong by any means. It's not my experience.
Thanks for getting involved as well. Thanks for your comments.
Yeah, absolutely. We've gone long this week. Do you want to wrap it up? We can save our email deliverability topic for another
Someone
day.
Someone might have tuned in for that, though.
All right, go. Let's do it. Let's just...
They've been waiting for it.
Way past the 20 minutes, so, you know...
We'll do this quickly because what we found was that this particularly was highlighted with a client conversation that we had. So for a while, Keith has been suspicious that emails that he's been sending from his @highrise.digital email address are not actually arriving in people's inboxes.
Yeah.
And this was highlighted with a conversation that we had with the client. And we were sort of not hearing from the client for like a week or two, and then they get back and say, oh, how's this going? Or have you made any more progress? And we were like, well, yeah, we've emailed like several times. So it turns out that having done some investigation and getting some external help and consultancy to come in and help us, that the high-rise digital domain was on, I think it was one blacklist. I think it was on one blacklist.
Sure, I think.
Or was it two? Sorry, was it two?
Yeah.
And the best guess as to why that was on a blacklist was because it's on a DigitalOcean server and some of these blacklisting services, I don't know if that's what they're called, but you know what I mean, sometimes blanket ban either a range of IPs because DigitalOcean is cheap and it's easy for spammers to spin up a site or a server and use them. And that's why we think it was probably banned. So quickly to the solution, or what we hope is the solution, because we're only just into this in the last few weeks, is that the person we were using for external consultancy suggested that one of the reasons this could be an issue, even because it's your email and not your website, you know, your email's got nothing to do with DigitalOcean. It's not even, we use Google, whatever it's called these days, Suite, whatever it's called. Yeah. But apparently some of these blacklisting services, when you send an email, they look up the A record on that domain. They see the A record is pointed to a DigitalOcean server, and then they ban it. So the solution was to install Cloudflare in front of it and act as a proxy so that you don't, the IP of your website is kind of hidden behind the proxy of Cloudflare. We installed that back end of last week. And it seems to have worked. We seem to no longer be on the blacklist, which I was amazed at how quickly it happened. But
yeah.
As I said, not fully know whether we're out of the water there yet, but it was an interesting solution that was proposed, actually a really simple solution as well, and it seems to have had some positive results. So fingers crossed, if you're having the same sort of issues, maybe that's something for you to try.
If you want to just quickly test your own domain for this kind of thing, mxtoolbox.com, you stick in your domain name, do an MX lookup, and it'll flag if you're on any lists.
The other more extreme option that we might actually still do, I'm not sure, we did discuss it and think that actually it's probably a good idea, is to purchase a separate domain for your email and do not point it at a website. So it never has any A record IP addresses anywhere near it. It's kind of a clean domain. And then use that for your email, which we might actually do as well to sort of like future-proof it a bit more, might be the word, but we'll see. It was interesting to see that this has got some positive results, so we'll see how it goes. But yeah, so yeah, if you were looking at email deliverability, a couple of things to look at there, definitely.
Yeah, let you know how it goes. Yeah. Let's wrap it up then. 45 minutes this week. Thanks for staying tuned for that whole time. Appreciate it. If you did enjoy the show, a couple of things you could do. You could give us a like. That'd be great. Or if you do want more content like this, please do consider subscribing. We're here nearly every week having conversations like this. So please do subscribe or like if you feel so inclined. Thanks for joining us on YouTube Live. Thank you for listening on the podcast.
Follow us on Twitter as well.
Oh, yeah, why not?
At WP Cafe Show.
Yeah, there you go. Another. How many call to actions is that? You're
not supposed to too many, but still.
Way too many. But we appreciate you. If we don't check in before Christmas, have a very Merry Christmas if you're celebrating. Enjoy your holidays, and we will see you soon. Thanks.
Bye-bye.